look through the window of the original Joe's on North Beach and you'll see two guys at the counter talking ball. Time for you to listen in to their conversation. Marty Lurie and the SF Chronicles' Bruce Jenkins are looking through the window of baseball. Sponsored by Original Joe's of North Beach and Westlake on KNBR 680, the sports leader.
All right, 2 months of the baseball season down. I guess it did start in March, so 2 months and a week. Down, it is June. We got 4 months to go. Baseball stories all over the place. And we bring in our good friend Bruce Jenkins. Bruce, how are you?
Good, Marty. How are you?
Very good. Start with maybe Josh Bell. Have you followed this one, Bruce?
Oh, man. He is just mashing. And a switch hitter. I mean, he's hitting massive home runs from both sides. He's got... What did he have? He had more, the most total bases in May since Willie Mays in 58?
That's correct. And he ended up with 94 total bases. And I thought he broke the record, but no, Willie still has it for the month of May of 102. And, you know, and I say, if you get 400 total bases in a year, you know, your Babe Ruth or Musial or something like that, this guy's got 94 in a month.
Yeah, and just, you know, and aside from the power, I mean, the total bases, that says it all. He's hitting around 340, hitting cleanup for them. He's a big part of, there's a little bit of resurgence there. I think the hopes were not that high in Pittsburgh after losing Cole and McCutchen and all these guys, but they're a tough team. They're only three or so games out, and he's a big part of it. He'll be in the All-Star game.
Yeah, you know, you got Yelich and Bellinger, but you got to consider this guy in the mix with them. Now, he had two in the drink. He's the first guy since the ballpark opened in 2001 to hit two in the river. So, yeah, maybe the most unknown superstar going on in baseball today, and that's what happens when you end up in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I mean, Bellinger is obviously getting a lot of play, and he should. He's got that phenomenal swing and follow through, and he was hitting close to 400. And Yelich is, you know, speaks for itself. MVP. He's come back with another season like that, and those guys are pretty much household names. But Bell, I tell you, he's sneaking into the picture. Monstrous hitter.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah. You know, so the other thing I thought about it, you know, we're starting to, as I say, the first 2 months you sort of figure out where you are. I think the Central has got a race. If you look from Cincinnati in last place right up to the Cubs, I think that's going to be a race the whole year.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and it's great, you know, anytime the Cards and the Cubs are involved. But, you know, Pittsburgh's right there. Milwaukee is really good. I mean, Cincinnati's only five games out. And, you know, the Giants have seen, you know, that team can really rake. I mean, talk about a beautiful launch angle swing. I'll put Suarez up there with anybody. I love that guy's power stroke. You know, Votto and Dietrich, you know, who has so much fun out there. You know, he's kind of a character, and they're a heck of a story. So they're not going away at all. It's a five-team race. You know, how cool would that be? It's the anti NL West.
Yeah. Cubs are half a game up in Milwaukee, and Milwaukee's got bullpen. Milwaukee's had the most bullpen innings of any team in the National League, which shocked me.
Could catch up with them.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. Giants are second, of course, with their starting pitching trouble. But Cardinals 3.5 out. They were 8-18 in May, and they're only 3.5 out. The Pirates are starting to win. They're 3.5 out. And the Reds, as you say, Tanner Roark goes today. He's been pitching great. They're 5 out. And Joey Votto's starting to hit.
Yeah, beautiful. Good stuff.
Yeah, I like it. You wrote about Bill Buckner this morning. I don't think we've had a chance to talk about it, and I know you wrote some beautiful words about him today.
Yeah, well, I mentioned that you know, when I got out of Cal, the first job I had was with the Santa Monica Evening Outlook down in, you know, down Southern California, and I was just kind of filling in for people. You know, my first year there, did some Lakers and some Kings, but they sent me on a Dodger trip. You know, and back then the Dodgers had their own plane, which was really, really special at that time. And traveling with the team, staying in the hotel with St. Louis, Chicago, and Pittsburgh, I saw Wrigley. I saw Clemente in his last season hit a home run at Three Rivers. I'll never forget that. But, you know, the Dodgers in those days, you know, they had so many good young players, Garvey, Valentine, and Say, and Tom Pashorek, and Bill Buckner, you know, out of Napa, who I knew as a tremendous football player. You heard about his feats at playing wide receiver for Napa High School. And talk about a pure hitter, you know, and he's such a contrast to the kind of game we're seeing today. I mean, guys strike out, it's like nothing. There's no embarrassment to it. There's no disgrace. It's like, yeah, you struck out. You could have hit a homer, but you didn't, so you struck out three times. Great. Have a great night. But, you know, for Buckner and guys like that, Tony Gwynn, Rod Carew, you know, it was an insult to strike out. He never did strike out three times in a game. And over, was it 22 years?
Yeah.
He never struck out more than 40 times in a season. He was just a pure hitter who I loved to watch play. And I was in the at Shea Stadium that fateful night in 1986, and it was just it was an amazing thing to watch. It's heartbreaking too. I was sitting next to a Red Sox fan. I wasn't working because in those days the Examiner put out the sports page, and we always had Saturday nights off. So I'm sitting there at Shea Stadium without anything to do on a Saturday night, watching that epic game go down. I was more incensed about Roger Clemens taking himself out of that game than with Buckner, but there's a lot of stuff that went into that game. But, you know, everybody was saying, well, they should have had Stapleton in there, and as I mentioned in the column, I didn't agree with that. Buckner's your guy. The ball was hit right to him. He's got the great hands. It was just not meant to be. I mean, you ask him 1,000 times, I don't care how bad my ankle hurts, I'm going to bend over and pick up that ball. But it just didn't happen. And he's remembered mostly for that now in the wake of his death, and I think that's a shame because there was so much more to his career.
Very good. And if you're under 40, you may not know what we're talking about. But in 1986, the Red Sox could have won the World Series and hadn't won since, 1918 or something. And the ground ball was hit to Bill Buckner, went through his legs. Winning run scored, and the Mets then ended up winning the World Series after a rain delay the next day in seven games. So Bill Buckner remembered for that error, but an outstanding player, outstanding player. So I'm glad that you noticed him. The other thing in the news this week, and it's about the protective screens. Have you seen all the articles about this? There was Albert Moro Jr. hit a ball that went into the stands, and a little four-year-old girl was hit by the ball and was hospitalized, and not clear what the extent of the injuries are. But it started another wave of put a protective screen up from the end of the dugout right to the foul pole. And baseball is now reacting to that. The Texas Rangers in their new park next year will have that. Mm-hmm. What's your thought about that?
Well, I mean, you know, coming from times when there was very little netting, you know, except behind the plate, you get used to the pure view, but, you know, the safety concerns, you know, really override everything. And you know, how many times have we seen a howling foul ball? You almost hate to see what's going to happen to it. If it's going to bonk somebody in the head who's looking down at his garlic fries, or heaven help you if it's a little kid. And, you know, then you go to a park where they've adjusted and they've put the screens in. And it doesn't ruin the game with the proper screens. You just get used to it after a while. It's like sitting behind the plate. And I wouldn't be opposed to that at all. I'd hate to see it, you know, rise up to where the second deck is also covered with a screen. That's a little bit much. But, yeah, I mean, I'm all for just cutting down these kinds of incidents to a minimum, if not eliminating them altogether, because it really is amazing that more people, especially the way people look down at their phones these days,
That's right. They're
not really watching the game. It's amazing that more people haven't been just conked right in the head.
Yeah, that's the difference. You know, I always talk about the changing times in the United States and history and how baseball changed with it. And you could always see things on the baseball field that you could see in history. And we are now more safety conscious. And we have phones and we have distractions and we have everybody, you know, buying, like you say, garlic fries or whatever, walking around looking at the scoreboard, which we don't. You know, the scoreboard used to be, you know, a handheld scoreboard, a few numbers put up there, the time of the day, a couple of out-of-town scores, and that was it.
Yeah.
Today, you look at the scoreboard and it's like you're in Las Vegas.
And sometimes the score isn't up there.
Yeah, you know, there's so much up there that you don't know what to look at. And all it is a really good eye test, I think, for optometrists or ophthalmologists to see if you need to go to the doctor. But that's what people do, and they're not watching the game. That's the problem.
Yeah, that is the problem. I mean, if you have everybody focused on the game, you're going to, you know, especially as you get farther down the lines, you're going to get out of the way of that ball. It's, you've got the time to react to it, and but that's just not the case at all. You know, it's a complete opposite. People are all, they're all looking down, and in the press box too. I mean, they've seen some real close calls up there. Or sometimes the computer gets smashed, and you know, what are you going to do now? But I'm definitely for it, given the state of fandom and what fans are doing in the stands. I think it's pretty essential.
Yeah, and you know, so, and I'm a guy who always liked the pure view of the ballpark.
Yeah,
I'm used to it. I really am, and I think the netting now is so fine. It's not like, you know, putting up, a net from a crab boat or something. You know what I mean? You know, it's...
Well, yeah, exactly, yeah.
It's so fine, you can hardly see it, so...
Yeah, yeah.
But...
And my wife and I were really anxious to get seats at the Giants Park when it first opened, and we were originally down at the field level, and I thought, oh, wait a minute now. I've always thought the better views are up in the second deck, because, we've been in the press boxes for a song, and we wound up grabbing a couple in the club level, but anything above the first deck where you have that pure view to me is the best, because you see more of the game, you see the entire game. You're closer to a lot of it down low, but sometimes the angles and the perspective aren't exactly the best. So I don't know. I've always preferred being up a little bit higher anyway, and you have a lot less chance of, oh my God, here comes a foul ball at my head.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I used to bring my glove,
still do. Martha brings a glove, and left hand hitters up. Well, get ready, hon.
Yeah, it's true. So that's changed as well, because you don't find as much. All right. Well, I think we're in agreement on that. I agree. It's not worth it. Because the ball is just being rocketed 105 miles off the bat and all that stuff. It's a different game, and you have to take care of it. What do you think of Camden Yards? I know John was just going on and on about it last night, and I love it. And Dwayne and Dave and talking about it, and here are the Giants in Camden Yards. What great new ballpark, 92, so 27 years, but great history there.
Oh, it's such a wonderful place. It really changed a lot of the baseball landscape, because everybody wanted their own Camden Yards, incorporating the neighborhood in a great tradition of baseball with the warehouse. And I was there right at the beginning. I was there when Ripken broke Lou Gehrig's longevity record.
Were you? You were there that night?
Yeah, it's a night I'll never forget.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. In those days, we did a lot of traveling. It's like, hey, why don't you get back there for that? You know, and then now I can barely get to Fresno. But I covered the All-Star game there, the home run hitting contest, tons of A's games, and I was just completely enthralled. I loved the old Baltimore Stadium. I totally loved it. It was one of the great atmospheres of all time. Great staff. And, Rex Barney, give that fan a contract. Mm-hmm. Very, very homespun kind of thing, which you don't get that in Baltimore. That's not what Baltimore is known for. But up there in that part of town, it was a wonderful thing, 33rd Street. But they built the definitive new ballpark. And even today, like I think I heard Kuiper say, I think this is my favorite park in the whole country outside of ours.
Yeah.
If you could ever get there, I think you'd agree.
Yeah, I went, I think after 96 when I started doing this stuff, I think I was there once or maybe twice, but it reminded me of Ebbets Field. It gave me that feeling of being 10 years old again and seeing, it was just gorgeous. And I didn't realize you were there that night. That's still one of my best nights of seeing baseball. Of my whole life, when Ripken broke the record and the 21-31 was unfurled off the warehouse, and he took the lap around, and what a moment for baseball!
Yeah, that was really special. I felt so privileged to write there, because you've got a modern day guy connecting you to the game's history, and I think it got a lot of people looking up Lou Gehrig and what he was all about, and that's such a big part of the game, is connecting with the history. I think we're losing a little bit of that, but to actually be there and feel the energy in the stadium and look at the pride on his dad's face, on Cal Sr.'s face, and just that whole scene was really, really remarkable.
Do you ever think of putting a book out, sort of the anthology of some of your you've written, of course, beautifully on every sport that we have in the Bay Area, of course, baseball being my favorite. Have you ever thought of putting a book out, like a Jim Murray kind of book?
I have. I've had a long-standing project where I'm going through all the papers and jotting stuff down. And after a while, I go, you know what, is this, do I really want, this is too much me here. I'm getting a little tired of me, and I kind of drop it. I think, but I'm slowly trying to put something together. I definitely hope to do that at some point. If nothing else, it's fun to go back and remember that you were there for these things and how you felt at the time and trying to put it into words. And it's been a real privilege for me. Baseball has been the real most of the stuff I've done over the years was in baseball, and who knows, that could happen.
I love it. Oh, that'd be great. I love the Jim Murray book. I could pick that up every year. I could pick it up and just read a bunch of his columns.
Oh yeah, he's got about five books out from one subject or another. He was my idol, and a lot of other people in L.A. I wouldn't put myself anywhere near that, but it's fun just to go back and relive some of the fun times you've had in the game.
Mm. Drew Pomerantz, speaking of fun times in the game.
That was fun, wasn't it?
I mean, honestly, and it, what got me afterwards, you know, everyone, I don't know if he'll start again. You don't know if he'll start again. He shouldn't even be on the team again.
No.
And, you know, there's no way he goes again, and you can't run a pitcher out there to kill your bullpen, and he doesn't know what he's doing. He said, I don't know what's wrong. Anything wrong here?
Yeah, he projects basically nothing. No energy, no motivation, no spark. You know, Flannery mentioned him very, very pointedly in the postgame, talking about mound presence, which I've always felt is a huge thing. You know, you get somebody like Kruko or Clemens out there or Bob Gibson, man, you know you're Bumgarner. You know, you're in for a battle. And Pomerantz doesn't project any of that. And it's important, especially if you're not, you know, a guy with, a Bob Gibson or Clemens kind of talent. And it was a real letdown. I mean, you get five and give up six? Come on. You can't do that. And the way the Giants move guys in and out, I mean, it's not going to cost them much to unload him. So he may have thrown his last pitch as a Giant, and, you know, you feel for the guy, but he's not really going to be missed.
No, it's not happening. And yeah. Flannery was all over it last night, and I agree with you. Last thought for you, I know we'll be on early tomorrow. We've got an early start tomorrow. But yesterday was the anniversary of the doubleheader of Gaylord Perry, his 10 innings, and the second game against the Mets, 7 hours, 50. And then I just say it, and I can't believe I'm saying these words, 7 hours and 52 minutes, 23 innings, the whole doubleheader took over 10 hours in New York, and people flew coast to coast, and the game was still going on. But Gaylord, 10 innings, that was his moment when he figured out, yeah, I can do this. I just put a little of this on the ball, and they can't hit it.
Yeah, well, in those days, you saw a lot more, heroic efforts from pitchers who, we need you to go about 15 today. We need you to throw about 175 pitches. Okay, no problem. And then come right back 3 days later, ready to go. But I don't have a lot of connection with that doubleheader. I wasn't there or watched it. But oh my goodness, that's the doubleheader has lost so much luster. It almost seems romantic now.
Yeah, I remember. Of course, I don't remember watching or listening to the game, but I remember the aftermath of it because it was a 10-hour day. And, of course, yeah, it involved the Mets. So, you know, New York was in the middle of it. So that was it. But, boy, that was the anniversary yesterday, May 31st, 1964. And that was the coming out party for Gaylord Perry.
Yeah, and I'm sure there were some little kids who go, Dad, is it over already?
And
I used to love doubleheaders. Yeah. Of course, in those days, they were both 2 hours and 20 minutes, you know. So,
well, the first game was 2:23.
Yeah, there you go.
That was easy. The second game was the problem, almost 8 hours. You can imagine that today, what the announcers would be. You'd have to take them off in stretchers today. You know.
Yeah, what are we going to do about this?
Right.
Yeah, this calls for an immediate meeting at MLB.
Right. Oh, God. All right. Have a good afternoon. We'll see. This David Hess gives up home runs like crazy, so we'll see what happens today.
You never know, Marty.
That's true. That's what Joaquin Andujar said. One word.
One word.
You never know. All right. Have a good afternoon.
Okay,
talk to you tomorrow.
Talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks, Bruce. All right. More coming up. KMBR 680, the sports leader.